Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
And your humble host is away on vacation and a break. We hope to resume podcasting the third week of August. In the meantime, I want to fill your ears with the audio from a recent television interview that I hosted about the shutdown of the San Onofre nuclear power plant here in California, the battle over who pays for the cost of shutting it down, and the battle over what happens to the stranded nuclear waste, the spent fuel now being stored on site right on the beach at San Onofre. You'll hear the voices of Ray Lutz from Citizens Oversight in San Diego and Mary Beth Brangen and Jim Heddle, who are longtime activists focused on nuclear power issues. I hope you enjoy this interview, and I'll be back shortly with fresh podcasts here at peterbcollins.com. I'm Peter B. Collins. Welcome to this conversation on Marin TV. Today, we're going to look at the shutdown of the San Onofre nuclear power plant and important issues related to the nuclear waste that has piled up at that facility. Joining me here in the studio from E.ON, based in Bolinas, are co-directors Mary Beth Brangen and Jim Heddle. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks.
Tell our viewers just briefly what E.ON focuses on. It's a range of issues.
Right.
Well, E.ON stands for the Ecological Options Network, and we focus mainly on pollution issues relating to nuclear technology and electromagnetic wireless technology, mm-hmm. as well as electoral integrity, because mm-hmm. you can't affect policy if you don't have integrity in your elections.
Mm-hmm. So it's two kinds of radiation, both invisible, both DNA damaging, both lethal.
Mm-hmm. And how long has E.ON been in existence? How long have you been doing this work?
Well, since 1980-something.
Deep into
86,
the last century.
84, yeah. But as Ecological Options Network, mm-hmm. since 2004.
Okay. And I want to refer to your website, eon3.net, where
or
people can go.
Yeah. Either one.
Okay, I found it on net.
Okay.
But
mm-hmm.
org works
yeah.
as well?
Both
mm-hmm.
work. Yeah.
Okay, good. And joining us by Skype for today's show is Ray Lutz. He is an activist based in San Diego with Citizens Oversight, and that organization is dedicated to transparency in public affairs and governance. And Ray has a focus, like you, on election integrity. And he and his organization have been very active in the issues related to the shutdown of the San Onofre nuclear power plant, and now the issues about what to do with that piled-up nuclear waste. Ray, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me, Peter. Really appreciate it.
And I have a deep respect for your activism, Ray. Give our viewers a sense of how long you've been an agitator.
Well, I really got started in this particular thing back in the around 2005 and 6 time frame. We couldn't get good people elected in our area. We started to just give up and instead attend the meetings where these elected officials were trying to rule on things. And we found we could be very effective in causing change just by being there and saying no at the right time. We ended up getting involved first with the Blackwater facility that was being, they were expanding into Southern California. This mm-hmm. took a year and a half of our time. Mm-hmm. And it became quite almost like a nuclear bomb went off because, you know, we thought we were just going to, you know, deal with some local issues. Turns out this was like an international issue, and it was around the world that had interest in this big 824-acre mm-hmm. paramilitary training camp. So that really got us started. And then in the you know, other things, but we got involved with Occupy San Diego, and after that, the nuclear plant when it shut down. But since around 2004 and 5, I've always been involved in the election integrity questions, did a lot of research on what, because my background is in document imaging and technology. I've got a master's degree in electrical engineering, but mostly worked in software and document stuff, worked in the facsimile standards bodies, worked on printer, scanner, fax, copier type products. So I'm very knowledgeable about, you know, imaging and document handling, that type of thing. And so that's why I was attracted to that, as I could probably help out there.
Mm-hmm. Now, the good news is that within the foreseeable future, all of the nuclear power plants in California will be shut down. Diablo Canyon will be the last. The twin reactors are scheduled to be shut down over the next 5 or 6 years. It is nice that San Onofre has been shuttered. Mm-hmm. It was due to deep malpractice mm-hmm. by Southern California Edison. Mm-hmm. They blame Mitsubishi for the issues with the reactors, but basically they screwed it up so badly that it couldn't be salvaged. And when the decision was made to shut it down, from my perspective, and I want to get Ray's detailed information here, but the ratepayers were expected to absorb the lion's share of the cost of the failures of the utility. Mm-hmm. And so, Ray, talk a little bit about the way the California Public Utilities Commission carried water, including some heavy water, for Southern California Edison. And it was quite a struggle to get a more fair settlement of the shutdown costs between ratepayers and shareholders.
Yes, it's taken, okay, it shut down in January 31st of 2012. So it's been over 6 years since that shutdown. The first settlement occurred at the end of 2014. So we've been working on a revised settlement for the last 4 years. In the first go-around, now the California Public Utilities Commission is set up so they can have courtroom-like proceedings where the two sides can, the utilities, and they actually will hire interveners if you want to come in and participate to be working against them in a courtroom-like proceeding so that these all the issues can come out. But really, there's no way that the California Public Utilities Commission has much muscle against these huge monopolies, because there really is no option except to use them. So if you find them, then they just add that, you know, they just add it to the rates, and we all suffer anyway. So it isn't really, it's kind of always bent against us. But in the first go around, they did have, they concocted this first settlement in secret meetings. And if you heard about the one in Warsaw, Poland, between President Michael Peavy and the executives of Southern California Edison's, where they really put together all the business points of what the settlement turned out to be in the first go round,
and they did it on stationery from that hotel in Warsaw.
Yeah, including, and this is what really we found out, you know, which ties it all together, including the $25 million giveaway to mm-hmm. the University of California, Berkeley, where Peavy had set himself up for a permanent like retirement position there, and so. That was not part of anyone's briefing. It came out through those handwritten documents and got into the settlement somehow. Okay, so it was actually put in there by the CPUC themselves. So this was really the smoking gun tying it all together to that original stationery from the Hotel Bristol in Warsaw, Poland. Mm-hmm. So that was $3.3 billion, that settlement. And essentially, it paid the Southern California Edison and SDG&E, according to their share of the plants, for about 10 years, as if it was still running. And so they were continuing to get profits from this thing. We always thought that it was fair to pay for about $500 million, which was basically the power that was bought on the market to replace the power. It was power that was actually used by the ratepayers at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's fair to pay for that because we did use it. It's really not replacement power, but they had that as a line item. So essentially we were saying that it was $2.75 billion too much for the shareholders. And the only way that this got unraveled was because that secret note was found due to an FBI investigation into the residence of Michael Peavy and during the San Bruno explosion disaster, okay, where the pipeline in San Bruno blew up. This was a pipeline that they had been taken money to repair,
right,
in their like 2007 time frame. They didn't do it. And in 2011, I think it's September 9th or so, the thing blew up and destroyed 24 homes and killed 8 people. Mm-hmm. And so that they were, because there was actual deaths involved, they actually were able to go in there and get this. So it was a stroke of luck that we got this handwritten note with Peavy's handwriting, you know, describing what the business points were, mm-hmm, in this thing. And once that was revealed, then we didn't know about it, but we had already put in a filing saying that we wanted the settlement to be reheard, and we had already filed our federal case because we knew something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Then went forward, and that's what stopped it. Yeah.
Okay, and just in the interest of time, just thumbnail for us the final settlement that was agreed to earlier this year.
So earlier this year, after a mediation of about a year, a lot of time and effort went into this. We finally got it reduced by about $775 million. And what we did was we tied it to a date. So they won't continue to take any money from the ratepayer after around December 17th of 2017. Maybe it's December 27th. Anyway, it's in December. And that way, because there's so many different parts, it's too easy to get sort of confused about the different buckets that they have. Mm-hmm. And we said, look, just stop. We don't want to pay for this thing anymore as of a certain date. Mm-hmm. And that's what is, as soon as they approve this, then there will actually be rebates in ratepayer statements for the time period from the 17th of December or whenever the date was up to whenever it's approved and when, mm-hmm, it can be activated. And that will shut down all of the payments. So it came down to about a $775 million additional benefit to the ratepayers after we got this all done.
And Ray, next, let's talk about the issues of the nuclear waste that remains on site there at San Onofre. And you've been running a campaign about no nuclear waste on the beach. And this facility, like Fukushima in Japan, is right on the coast. It is, what, 100 feet from the water to the current closest repository pool?
Yes. To the spent fuel dry storage facility installed. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so, given the issues of sea level rise, the vulnerability of California to earthquakes, the idea of some sort of a Fukushima-type event is quite likely at San Onofre. So what does the utility plan to do with its nuclear waste? What is their proposal, Ray?
Yeah, well, the thing is that even the utility has had to agree that this site is a pathetic place. I mean, they won't say this. I can't put words into their mouth. Let me just say what I think, and everyone agrees with this, is that this has to be the worst place on the planet to decide to put a nuclear waste facility. As you said, it's 100 feet from the water. It's right there. It's got millions of people around it, right next to a superhighway, a railroad, which is the number two heaviest used railroad in the nation, and a beach, which if you go to Japanese plants and other plants, there's supposed to be an exclusion area around these plants where no one goes near it. And they allow people just to walk up to this thing on the beach, and they have for years. So essentially, when this was proposed, we try to object in the Coastal Commission meetings. Of course, they just give you 2 minutes to say something, and then they vote on it anyway. In fact, they had their press release released too early, saying that there was a unanimous vote, mm-hmm. accidentally. And so we caught them trying to rig it. But, you know, the utility gets to work on this for years. We got notice only a few weeks before that this was coming out. Then you have to rapidly try to go up there to Long Beach, get everything in. But we sued them to the Coastal Commission. The problem was we really didn't have any way to actually stop it because the waste is there. It is at the plant. They've already generated it. You can't just get it to go away. It's not like most activist things where you're trying to block a development or something that you can actually just stop. Mm-hmm. This stuff is there, and the question is, what are we going to do with it? Well, it was not feasible to stop it completely. And instead, what we did was we went into a settlement process where instead of just hoping that the judge would rule in our favor, and the chances were very low that it would happen, instead, we went for getting a negotiated settlement where, and it's turned out, I think, to be pretty good and pretty strong because talks later have proven this. Essentially, what we've gotten from them is they spend $4 million. They have hired 6 very high-level experts in this field to find out how to basically to plan a strategic plan of what to do with the waste and a transportation plan of if we're going to move it somewhere, where is it going to move? And they had to take a look at the Palo Verde nuclear plant, which is near Phoenix, which is one option. That's an existing nuclear plant, has waste there already, is partly owned by Southern California Edison, sells a lot of power to California. And that plant, it would be a good place, you know, that's already got waste, where we could easily just add this little bit of waste to what the larger amount they already have. The
so, Ray, hold on just a sec. Let me get reaction from Mary Beth and Jim. What is your sense of the credibility of that plan to ship this to Phoenix?
Oh, it's heartbreaking because you've got the transportation risk. They've got the risk of moving it at all. There are people who say that you can't even, there's maybe problems just moving it across the road to a higher place, because of the way they've constructed the canisters, which Ray has also tried to address. But we've just returned from New Mexico, where another site has been targeted to ship it to, and the people there are adamantly opposed.
Mm-hmm.
They've already suffered a lot.
Now we're going to hear some of those voices in just a moment. And well, Control Room, I'd like to go to that clip first when we get ready in just a moment. Jim, your comment?
Well, the people at Palo Verde came out immediately and said, we don't want it and we're not going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess negotiations will continue, but that wasn't a very good start.
Yeah.
For the plan.
I'm sometimes critical of the NIMBY types, but in this case, I have great empathy. I wouldn't want it in my backyard.
Well, absolutely. You didn't benefit from it, although the people in the area of San Onofre didn't ask for it either. In
mm-hmm.
fact, there was resistance to building it there to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's really a conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't leave it there. It's a bad place to leave it there. It's very hazardous to try and move it.
Yeah.
So, and then where would you move it? Now, many people are advocating just moving it the minimal amount. That's the least risky,
mm-hmm.
and that would be, they're suggesting up higher to another place on Camp Pendleton where it's already on leased land from Camp Pendleton.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a possibility, but of course they don't want it either.
Yeah.
But
now, in just a second, I want to hear the voices of the people in New Mexico.
Right.
You have some people, the officials, who favor this Holtec International nuclear waste site in New Mexico. But, Jim, give us a couple of particulars. Where in New Mexico, and is this adjacent to the other nuclear facilities like Los Alamos?
Well, first I want to say that this is like a national conundrum. this mm-hmm. issue at San Onofre and where to put it. This is not just about, this is like a microcosm of what's going to be faced as a whole cascade of decommissioned nuclear plants mm-hmm. comes in the next years.
We call it a fleet. We yeah. have a fleet yeah, of nuclear reactors.
Yeah. So that's why we decided to focus on this particular shutdown sequence. But the transportation risks along the routes go through many highly populated areas, including downtown Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And so, and then in New Mexico, it's right on the border between West Texas and New Mexico.
Southeast New Mexico.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's already called by the residents their Nuclear Alley because there's the waste isolation pilot plant that just had an explosion and blew up a couple of years ago, supposed mm-hmm. to last safely for 10,000 years. Mm-hmm. After 15, it blew up. Then there's a uranium enrichment plant just down the road. Mm-hmm. And there's, right on both sides of the border, there's two proposed so-called centralized interim storage facilities. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that this area is a highly fracked and drilled area. And recent geological investigations have shown that it's kind of like Swiss cheese. Mm. It goes up and down depending on whether water is pumped in or sucked out.
And the frackers are willing to rape the earth to get gas and oil, but they don't want to compound it with nuclear waste. So let's go to the clip now, and Jim, go ahead and comment on it at points if you'd like as we watch this.
Okay.
We had what we believe was an ideal site. It was dry, seismically stable. It was just it's 35 miles from any population. It was just a great site. We put out an RFP, Holtec wanted, and we were pleased because they have the best system in the world, bar none.
Our partner, the Eddie Lee Alliance, who members of that alliance are here tonight, was formed in 2006 to help you diversify the area, the economics of the area, and to help encourage economic growth in the area, and we're happy to be a part of that. We have an impeccable safety record. None of our equipment has ever experienced a safety issue, leaked as you so call it, but I would like to point out, spent nuclear fuel is not a liquid, it can't leak.
I'm here to tell Holtec, hell no, we don't want it. I am so sick and tired of all these big companies coming into New Mexico or close to my town in Eunice wanting to give us all this crap that could kill us.
If this transport should occur, it's directly violating our tribe's laws that were put in place because of all the history and the health impacts, the horrendous things that the United States did, not just going back to the genocide of our people, but more recently, the exploitation of uranium on our lands. And so we have a law against uranium mining, and we have a law against transport because we've already suffered the impacts from these industries. And so that did not benefit our people. We wrote these laws for the protection of our future generations. However, they are not being respected here.
It's hard to think of a worse place to choose for placing an interim waste site than right here. The area is surrounded by aquifers, some close, some far. The sediments in the sedimentary rock are porous and permeable. The thin barrier they claim is being on the top is not sufficient. It's just like the WCS site, which is really no better. So this is not a good place to put a hazardous waste site, especially one for nuclear waste.
I don't know what you guys have seen when it comes to the studies of the geological parts of Midland, Texas, but we're on the cusp of being the world's largest energy producer. Okay, we are going to control oil very soon. We're going to control our own destiny. So West Texas is one of the most valuable places in the world right now, especially the United States. And unfortunately, because of this, I implore you to look up Dr. Zong Liu's study from SMU. This is very, very new. West Texas is sinking. We're not sinking slowly. We're sinking at a rate of 4 inches per year. I know we need a site. This is not it. If this thing sinks and we get something like the WIP accident that was never supposed to happen, we can't redig these canisters up. And if it sinks below us and we lose them, the environmental impact is forever. And if we lose West Texas oil, natural gas, the people of Roswell, the people of New Mexico, the people of Texas, the United States, we're done.
My name is Jimmy Carlisle. I work for Fast Fuel and Ranch based in Midland. We are an oil and gas company, but we are also a major landowner in the state of Texas. We own some 200,000 net acres in the state of Texas. But the thing we watch the closest is the quantity and the quality of our groundwater. Groundwater, folks, is the lifeblood of the ranching business. If you don't have groundwater, you just own dirt.
I intend to organize all the ranchers and all the commissioners' courts and everybody in all the governments in all this whole region. This is not a Republican or Democrat issue. This is a safe, this is an important issue to all of us. And I believe that I just cannot tell you the horror that could happen if we ever have an accident. And so I intend to organize all of our governments that are willing to listen. But the way I'm going to do that is get my friend Jimmy and all the ranchers and all the rich oil men
to
contact their commissioners and their mayors and their representatives, House representatives, senators, and so forth. And I don't intend to let this thing run over. So thank you so much.
Jim and Mary Beth, thank you for bringing us that footage from the meetings that you attended in New Mexico. I have less than 3 minutes remaining here, so I want to ask each of you to give me a brief answer, if you would. And Ray, I'll start with you. Is there a location that you have become aware of that you can recommend to pursue for nuclear waste storage somewhere in the continental United States?
Well, actually, I think it's a bit over my head to try to do that. This is why we set up this panel of six people to do this, because I'm not claiming to be an expert enough to be able to pick out a place. It is nearly impossible to do. But as I was saying, the Palo Verde plant was one of the options that we're required to look into someplace in New Mexico because they had those on the drawing board. But then we also recommended right across the freeway from the plant and inland, maybe 3 miles mm-hmm. away from the ocean and up away from tsunami risk, mm-hmm. and the transportation would be minimal. And we have since then introduced the Helms proposal, which is hardened extended life local monitored surface storage. That's ATLMS, and you can see it at the Helms proposal at citizensoversight.org. That's been submitted to the NRC, and it proposes a 1,000-year life of these canisters instead mm-hmm. of just 40 years. We've got to do better. We have to find places to put this, and our point of view is someplace near the plants where they are. We're hoping the rest of those plants will shut down in a timely manner now. It looks like they're totally uneconomic at this point, mm-hmm. and you're insane to keep them rolling. So
well, let me stop you there. Ray, let me stop and turn to Jim for 30 seconds or so. Do you have an outline or an idea of where we could store this nuclear waste?
There's no good place to store it anywhere, mm-hmm. anywhere in the world. Yeah. This is why it's a national and global conundrum.
And Mary Beth, you've raised the important issues about transportation.
Oh,
our infrastructure is not set up
mm-mm.
to bridges, handle.
I mean, it's so heavy, these things. But also I want to say that the Nuclear Waste Technical Review Board under the DOE, the Department of Energy, has admitted in their discussions there is not adequate technology at this time to do what's needed mm-hmm. for this waste.
Mary Beth Brangen, Jim Huddle, thank you for being with me in the studio. And Ray Lutz, thank you for joining us by Skype for this program today.
Thank you.
I really appreciate the work you're doing. It is critical, and I hope you'll continue.
Thank you.
Thank you all, and thanks for watching Marin TV.